We're back on the Bengals Beat podcast. I'm Lindsay Patterson alongside Tyler Dragon and Charlie Goldsmith. How you guys doing?
So there is snow on the ground. Y'all know how I feel about cold weather. I'm inside my place with the heat blasting, thinking about getting some hot chocolate before it gets real cold. But I mean, I'm doing all right, but I'm definitely trying to stay warm in this winter time, winter season.
Tyler, this might be a controversial opinion, but I've never been a hot chocolate fan. There are never places that really specialize in it. You know, like Starbucks hot chocolate or like McDonald's hot chocolate just isn't as good as their coffee. So that's usually my drink of choice in the cold.
Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, I understand. I'm not like a huge hot chocolate fan either. Like sometimes I'll have tea at night. Sometimes I'll have hot chocolate. I do prefer coffee in the morning. I do not drink coffee in the evening time, though. But, you know, at night, if it's cold, maybe some tea, maybe some hot chocolate. Definitely some wine on occasion. My beverages of choice. What about you, Lindsay?
I'm definitely a wine person, I'll say that. But as soon as you guys mention hot chocolate, I'm just here to tell you, don't sleep on Dunkin' Donuts hot chocolate. It is absolutely amazing. I'm a low-key Dunkin' Donuts lover, so go ahead and get that hot chocolate next time you're going through the drive-thru. But locally, not a whole lot going on with the Cincinnati Bengals. They're wrapping up running back coach interviews. A lot going on in the quarterback world when you look at this offseason right now. Look, we still don't know if Joe Burrow is going to be ready for week one. We've talked about that plenty of times. He's a couple weeks away from when he's supposed to start running and throwing, and we'll have more updates on that when we get into February. But Deshaun Watson nationally just making the news right now. And if you see the experts over on social media, they'll tell you every team but the Kansas City Chiefs should be calling the Houston Texans right now. I think it's going to be fun. It's wild to see where Deshaun Watson could end up landing when you have a quarterback heavy draft. But what does this mean for the Cincinnati Bengals and just the NFL world in general with Deshaun Watson requesting a trade?
Yeah, you know, and he has a no trade clause. So he has, you know, some leverage going into this. He's made it known. He's leaked it through the media that he wants out. He formally requested a trade. And, you know, the Texans hiring David Culley, that's not going to change Watson's mind. I personally think either the Dolphins, the 49ers, the New York Jets, or even the Patriots make the most sense for Watson. So it's like you said, it's going to be really interesting to see what happens with that situation. And, you know, it's kind of reminds me of the NBA a little bit where, you know, players, they kind of have, you know, some power and, you know, they have leverage. And if they request a trade, more likely than not in the NBA, they're going to get their wish. In the NFL, not so much. But it is looking like in this particular situation that Deshaun Watson has some leverage and he's going to eventually get his way. But for the Bengals, I can assure everybody that they aren't interested in Deshaun Watson. You know, they like what they have in Joe Burrow. They believe he's their franchise quarterback and a quarterback of the future. There's a lot of optimism that he is going to start week one and be healthy enough on the field. He said that publicly through the media and, you know, a press conference with us. He said that in press conferences with others. So the Bengals, they like what they have at quarterback. You know, they think Deshaun Watson is one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. They'll privately tell you that Deshaun Watson at this point of his career is better than Joe Burrow, which, I mean, I don't think is breaking news at all, but, you know, they like what they have in Joe Burrow and the situation that, you know, they have building in Cincinnati.
The NFL in almost all of professional sports is unique in its offseason in this way. When we discuss the stages that the NFL offseason goes through, we use the word waves. Wave one, wave two, wave three. In MLB, you know, it takes months for an offseason to develop, and there's no rhyme or reason really to who gets signed where, in terms of pecking order financially or talent wise, anything like that. In the NBA, we often see the biggest stars take a few days to figure out where they're going to go. So in the first days of free agency, it's some of the smaller guys who get more of the money. The NFL works most often wave one, wave two, wave three, kind of sequentially in terms of the splashiest moves. You know, Tom Brady signed early in free agency. The Bengals signed DJ Reader and Trey Waynes on basically the first day of free agency last season, et cetera. This year, because there are only about maybe 12 to 15 or 16 teams who really like have set in stone a quarterback for next season, they're almost going to be a wave zero. Where through trades and through posturing, like what we're seeing from Deshaun Watson, teams are going to have to figure out their quarterbacks before they figure out anything else. Take, for example, a team like the Miami Dolphins. They have to know whether or not Deshaun Watson is their quarterback and how much they will be paying that quarterback before they can improve, say, their wide receiving core in free agency. The 49ers have to know who their quarterback is going to be before they can address other needs. And, you know, the secondary, who knows, the whole team was hurt last season. The Bengals have the advantage of not needing a quarterback. They can use that time, that lead up to the official start date of free agency and the kickoff of the NFL offseason to scheme elsewhere, to plan elsewhere, and to put more attention in certain areas like offensive line than other teams might be using right now.
I think the most important thing when you look at the NFL, and Charlie mentioned it, you've got to address the quarterback position. But when you have your franchise quarterback, look, we only got to see Joe Burrow for about 10 games last year, and he was a promising rookie. It's unfortunate he didn't get to finish his rookie year. They have playmakers in T. Higgins and Tyler Boyd. But if you're looking at the NFL draft, and we are 3 months and one day away from the draft finally being here, if it's going to be in Cleveland or virtually, we still don't know. If you're the Cincinnati Bengals, we are almost in February, and you think about Joe Burrow, you think about the future, you think about him coming off this injury, and you guys are the GM of this team right now. Are you going offensive line with the number 5 pick? Are you going playmaker?
Well, that is a good question, and I know this question is going to come up a plethora of other times before the draft. If I am the Bengals GM, I'm going to draft an offensive lineman. I know it's not a sexy pick, but I believe it's the right way to go. And Penei Sewell or even Rashawn Slater, those will probably be the two players at the top of my board for offensive linemen. Sewell will be my first choice, then Slater. And then my third choice, if I'm the Bengals, will probably be Ja'Marr Chase. And that is because of his obvious ability, number one, and then his continuity with Joe Burrow. So those would probably be the three players at the top of my draft board at number 5. There's obviously going to be a question if Penei Sewell will be there available at the number 5 pick. Also, even if, you know, the LSU wide receiver, Ja'Marr Chase, will be there at number 5. I know there's interest in both of them, from the New York Jets, the Miami Dolphins, the Atlanta Falcons. So it's going to be interesting. There's plenty of weeks and days to talk about this, but that would be my draft board, my top three players on my draft board if I am the Cincinnati Bengals.
I've said this before, the Bengals' number one need this offseason needs to be being in a position at the draft where they can take the best player available. They need to do the legwork necessary in free agency to where they don't feel pigeonholed to fill a certain position in the draft, in my opinion. Their first player on their draft board, I believe, should be addressing their biggest need in free agency and signing a starting right tackle. That allows things to get really interesting on draft night. If the Bengals spend $5 to $10 million signing a proven commodity at right tackle, an upgrade over Bobby Hart, that allows you to have more flexibility.
personally, I think regardless of what happens, the Bengals should draft Penei Sewell if he's available. But if the Bengals already have a right tackle in place and Penei Sewell is off the board, arguably wide receiver and a high upgrade player, a very high upside playmaker like Jamar Chase at wide receiver, will probably have a bigger impact on the 2021 Bengals and that core going forward than an offensive tackle like Rashawn Slater would. I think Slater's a very good offensive tackle. I covered him at Northwestern, and I've been at probably 80% of the college football games he's played. And, you know, we can talk in depth about how big of a fan I am of Slater's game, but I know that Jamar Chase will help the Bengals win more games than Rashawn Slater would, despite how talented and instinctual and athletic Rashawn Slater is. The Bengals need to be in a position in free agency to where they can get really the best player available. And in my eyes, it goes Sewell and then Chase.
I think a lot of people are torn out there when they look at it. Obviously, offensive line needs to be addressed. You can't go into 2021 with what you have when you have a quarterback coming off an injury due to an offensive line issue, whether people want to admit it or not. We saw what happened against the Washington football team. This team needs free agency to get here. We need free agency to get here so we can talk about it and see the needs that this team addresses if they focus on the defensive side again or if they pick up an offensive line. We're really not going to know if this team is going to stay at 5. It could change with it being a quarterback heavy first round or if they dress an offensive line with the number 5 pick. But guys, we're almost there. We're almost to free agency. I'm not even looking at the draft right now. We need free agency to get here. But when you
What's your draft board look like, Lindsay? You have to tell us too now.
Every day I look at that 5 pick and I change my mind because I look, obviously you talk about me, you talk about protecting Joe Burrow. I mean, Dennis, we've talked about this for over a year now, ever since they drafted Joe Burrow. I see Jamar Chase there and I look at other NFL teams and yes, protecting your quarterback, your franchise quarterback is the biggest thing you need to do going into the season. Because of what happened last year, and it should have happened last offseason, but they focused heavily in free agency on the defensive side. I look at teams right now, and I say offense wins championships, and I see playmakers. I see a guy that needs to be on the field at the same time as T. Higgins and Tyler Boyd, and what that could do offensively for this team, even having Joe Mixon out there. I think Jamar Chase, Joe Burrow reunion would be something for that offense going forward. But I don't think I have a decision made yet because I don't know if they'll stay at 5 right now. Who knows if, you know, a scenario happens where the Jets offer up their number 2 pick for Deshaun Watson and what happens to the draft board. Obviously, Houston would have to go quarterback. So much could happen. But I just need free agency to get here before I can even make that decision because I look at offensive line one day and then the next day it's like, you got to go playmaker. But at the same time, the draft doesn't end after the 5th pick. You can get somebody in the 2nd round, the 3rd round. It's a heavy offensive line class. I'll be talking to Daniel Jeremiah about it. He said it. The first 2 days is going to be so offensive line and obviously quarterback heavy. So they could wait until the 2nd round, but we'll have more on that when we get in.
So let me ask you guys this, a hypothetical question, if I may. So say the Bengals are healthy at the start of the season. Now that's a big if, but there's optimism.
Yeah.
And they have obviously Joe Burrow starting at quarterback, Joe Mixon in the backfield. We'll say, you know, CJ Uzama at tight end. Now at wide receiver, you have Tyler Boyd in the slot. You have T. Higgins outside. And say, I'm not breaking the news or anything, but AJ Green is not here, and you have Auden Tate. You two don't feel that those playmakers are enough to be successful?
I think Jamar Chase changes the offense. I really do. I think what he could do offensively as another playmaker out there, because honestly, you can look at Auden Tate and say, oh, you got a red zone receiver right there. This team needs a guy like Chase on this offense. And I think you obviously the expectations are still going to be really high with T. Higgins going into year 2, what he was able to do in his rookie year, what could have been if Joe Burrow would have stayed healthy with that relationship with Higgins and Burrow. Boyd is obviously a great receiver you have on this offense, but I think you look around the league and this team, if they added Jamar Chase, I don't know what other wide receiver group you would really compare to it as being one of the tops in the NFL.
Okay.
I have 2 points here about the upside of drafting a high upside wide receiver. First, I will address Auden Tate. You know, I really appreciate the toughness and the physicality he brings, but he doesn't have a track record at all of being a starting wide receiver over a 16-game stretch. That's just never been who he is. On top of that, if you pencil him in as the Bengals' third wide receiver, I don't have the contracts in front of me, but I know that, you know, I think Stanley Morgan might be their next best receiver under contract for 2021. I believe Mike Thomas is up, and Mike Thomas is someone who really didn't play down the stretch of last season. So then that group positionally, I think, becomes a weakness. And here's what I'll say post that, kind of factoring in Jamar Chase. He, I think, is the Bengals' last chance to add another number one receiver. I think that when you look at what the Bengals will address beyond 2021, heading into 2022 and 2023, you could probably guess they'll keep addressing both lines. They'll probably down the road have to add another cornerback somewhere, definitely get better at linebacker and start investing there, which they haven't done a ton in a while. Wide receiver, because of the guys they have, doesn't, it's too much of a luxury to invest in free agency, or with like a pick in, say, the 15 to 30 range, which the Bengals, I guess, hope to be in going forward. You're never going to have another chance to add a guy like Jamar Chase ever, unless the Bengals do something that really breaks character for them by drafting a receiver in that range or by paying big money for an external free agent wide receiver. So Jamar Chase or Devonta Smith, who I'm a fan of as well, or hell, even Kyle Pitts, who's a really unique, has really unique positional versatility as a tight end. They all, one, let you add that tier one playmaker. It's kind of their last chance to do that going forward. And they also let you have an actually well-rounded wide receiver / tight end group heading into 2021.
Okay. I like where you guys are going. I do think the Bengals' top priority, though, is to upgrade that offensive line. And I think that unless their number one and maybe one A lineman is off the board, I think the Bengals are going to draft the offensive lineman with that number five pick. But I may be wrong and things might change.
Yeah, I'm like I said, we just need free agency to get here to see where their mindset's at. See if this team is just thinking internally or they're going to add big name assets, which past history shows, and we've talked about it plenty of times. They're not.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Lindsay, can I ask a question real quick? I'm curious to hear both your guys' answers. How would you guys feel about a Bengals offensive line in 2021 that's going from left to right? Let's say Jonah Williams, Quentin Spain, let's say they bring him back, Trey Hopkins / Billy Price at center, at right guard, Xavier Suofilo, and at right tackle, Rashawn Slater. How would you guys feel about that offensive line?
Are you saying that Slater is going to be their fifth pick right now?
That I'm just saying theoretically they take Slater. Theoretically, as Tyler was saying, if the Bengals had Slater over Chase and Smith on their board, and yes, they take Slater at five.
I mean, if you listen to some of the draft experts out there, they're really high on Slater. And they would have him as their number one offensive lineman right now. It would obviously be an upgrade on their offensive line. And I know everybody wants to focus on the tackle position. I totally get it. I still think the main focus is the guard position. Even if they bring Quentin Spain back, I still think this team needs to spend money in free agency on a guard. They won't do it. They're probably not going to do it. They haven't done it in the past. They're still trying to find Kevin Zeitler's replacement. I guess my main focus is – that's a tough one. That was a tough one, man. I was like, I don't know. I don't know if I'm high on Slater at five. I'll just say that for that offense.
Well, the team will say that they did spend money on the guard position by adding Xavier Suofilo last year in free agency and also during the season picking up Quentin Spain. That's what they will tell you. Now, to answer your question, Charlie, I do think that is a better offensive line And I think the Bengals can feel comfortable with that O-line if, you know, they build continuity and play together. That's the big thing. The entire offensive line was a revolving door last season because of injuries. Now, you know, I've heard from several sources, and I mean, I've written about it. The Bengals' top priority this offseason is to protect Joe Burrow, who they believe is their franchise quarterback. And, you know, even nationally, the perception after Joe Burrow got hurt is, here we go again. The Bengals can't protect their, you know, franchise investment in the Bengals. You know, they're quote unquote, you know, ruining this kid. And I never said that. It's, you know, some people around the NFL world, whether it's other reporters or scouts, some GMs, well, assistant GMs. And so the Bengals hear that. They won't admit it publicly, but they hear that. And I mean, when you watch film, part of it was Joe Burrow's fault holding the ball long, which is common for rookie quarterbacks and young quarterbacks. You like to see a play develop before you, you know, you throw to your target. So some of the hits and sacks are on Joe Burrow, but a lot of them were because of inept offensive line play. And that is from the guard position and from the tackle position. Now, some of the times I'm giving the tackles a pass a little bit because those guys on the other side, they get paid too. And there's a reason why Miles Garrett's of the world, the Joey Bosa's of the world get paid a whole lot of money because they know how to get after the quarterback. And so that's who Jonah Williams and Bobby Hart are going up against every single play. So giving up maybe a sack a game or two sacks a game or a couple QB hits, I mean, yeah, you're going to give up that when you're going up against Miles Garrett, Joey Bosa, TJ Watt. I mean, those guys are really, really good. And unfortunately for the Bengals, they're in a division where you have a Miles Garrett, a TJ Watt, a Matthew Judon, the guys that can get after the quarterback, and the Bengals don't have premier tackles. Now, Jonah Williams has the ability to be a pretty good tackle, but, you know, he's still learning, and last year was theoretically his rookie season, first year playing after missing his entire first year because of shoulder injury. And Bobby Hart, I mean, we already know he's much maligned. He's fans dislike him. But last year he did okay. He didn't do bad by any stretch of the imagination. He competed out there. Could the Bengals do better than him? Of course. Is Penei Sewell better than him? From what I've seen on tape, probably. But again, that was in 2019, and he's going up against Pac-12 pass rushers. Totally different ballgame. Now, Charlie, you can attest to this as well. I've seen tape on Rashawn Slater. I've seen tape of him going up against Chase Young, and he did a pretty good job. And Chase Young is on the cusp of winning NFL Defensive Rookie of the Year. So I do think that the Bengals, they recognize all this, and their number one goal is to protect their investment. They invested a lot in the 2020 number one overall pick, Joe Burrow. And if you upgrade that offensive line, that fixes a whole lot. Even, and I know fans see like the receivers and what Patrick Mahomes is doing in Kansas City and what Tom Brady is doing with that receiving core in Tampa Bay. But look what happened to Aaron Rodgers. The reason why the Packers lost that game is because they couldn't protect Aaron Rodgers that well. He was sacked, what, 5 or 6 times? Because he was without their left tackle. That was a big loss. And it's going to be big in the Super Bowl when the Chiefs are without their starting tackles, because that's huge. And so the Bengals, if they upgrade that O-line, that not only affects their passing attack, but also their ability to run the football. And keep in mind that they also have a Pro Bowl caliber running back in the backfield. And then they have a number one type caliber receivers in T. Higgins and Tyler Boyd, who can, we've seen, can be 2 1,000-yard receivers. And there's only one football. So then you're going to add a third receiver when you already have also 2 receivers that can get 1,000 yards, and you have a Pro Bowl caliber running back. So I know I went long, but that's just my stance.
You feel pretty passionate about that. So I'm the line for Tyler in 2021. It's a great question, actually. And it could be the situation that they're going to be in. Depends on what happens in the first 4 picks. If obviously somebody tries to get out of the picks prior to the Bengals picking at 5, if the Bengals trade down and grab more assets, which is a real possibility for them taking Slater in the first round and upgrading their offensive line. It would obviously be an upgrade. But as of this moment, days away from February, I don't know if I'm sold on Slater with the 5th pick when I look at the offensive line. Later, maybe, but that's to be determined. Everybody loves cap space, you guys. Slater's cap space. Looking at what's going to happen, will this team spend the same amount of money or something similar? Are they going to re-sign Carl Lawson, William Jackson III? A lot of free agents internally for the Cincinnati Bengals right now. I said priority number one is Carl Lawson, and it wouldn't hurt to go ahead and try and extend Jesse Bates when you look at the safety position. Are we going to see any surprises with the cap space? Now, we talk about Bobby Hart, we talk AJ Green, Geno Atkins, more than likely, if they do decide to move on from them. Do you see any surprises in the cap space room, like a guy like CJ Uzomah or even Gio Bernard in the running back room?
So I think what's not getting a lot of attention is the estimated 2021 salary cap is projected to be around $176 million. And that's a $22.2 million decrease from the 2020 salary cap. And all that is a consequence of the coronavirus pandemic. So that's going to have a tremendous effect on all NFL teams. And the cap isn't set yet, but people are projecting that it's going to be a little bit over a $22 million decrease from it was before. And so teams are going to have to deal with that, number one, first and foremost. Now, when it comes to if the Bengals are going to have any cap surprises, I've reported this a couple months ago that I'm hearing that it it's likely that the team could cut ties with Geno Atkins. They would save $9.6 million, I believe, if they cut him before June 1st. They're going to have these conversations not only with Atkins, but Zach Taylor, Duke Tobin, Mike Brown. They're going to have those conversations. They think the world of Geno Atkins. Obviously, he's been one of the best defensive tackles in the last decade in the NFL, future Hall of Famer. I don't see them cutting, you know, veterans like maybe CJ Uzomah. He's a great locker room guy, team leader. Unfortunately, he was looking like he was going to have a career season before he got hurt. I know it was a short sample size, but caught Joe Burrow's first touchdown, and he was looking like a player that could be a starting tight end in this league before he tore his Achilles. Giovanni Bernard, I know that's another name that comes up a lot. The team would save $4.1 million if they cut him. Bobby Hart, they would save $5.8 million if they cut him. I know fans are clamoring for that to happen. So the Bengals will have some room in free agency, regardless of what the overall salary cap is. If, you know, they cut ties with some of their veteran players, primarily if they release Geno Atkins and Bobby Hart to sign a free agent. I know you guys want Tooney at guard. So it's going to be interesting. These conversations are ongoing. They're fluid. But, yeah, to answer your question, I can see the Bengals cutting ties with some of their veteran starters from the last several years.
Let's go across the board almost and mention the Bengals' needs that they need to fill this offseason. They need a backup quarterback. They need another running back. They need to replace a starting wide receiver and fill out the rest of that room. They need a starting right guard, a starting right tackle, a starting defensive end, a starting defensive tackle, two starting cornerbacks, and a starting kicker and a starting punter. It's a long list, and in a lot of ways, cap space doesn't go as far as you think. So here's where I think it's interesting. So what I said earlier was that I could see personally the Bengals spending 6 to 10, maybe even 12 on a right tackle. They'll spend to address the line, but personally, I don't envision them going out and getting one of those premier $14 to $18 million free agents on the offensive line. They need help at defensive tackle. I don't see them getting the best person on the market there. They need help at wide receiver. I don't see them going out and getting a Kenny Galladay or Allen Robinson. I think that the Bengals have so many needs that while they can create a lot of space relatively, it's not going to be like, you know, an NBA team creating max cap space. It's going to be a team that chunk by chunk, bite by bite, uses up as much of that cap space as it can.
Now looking on, I mean, goodness, we have free agency cap space if there's going to be any cuts like that. And I think you're right, Tyler, when you talked about CJ Uzomah and then Gio Bernard, because when Joe Mixon was hurt last year, we pretty much saw a lot of Gio Bernard, and he's been a consistent player for this organization for a while now. And CJ Uzomah, obviously Drew Sample became more part of the offense, what they used him for in the future with the offense, if they use it to tight end setup. Offensively, something, you know, Joe Burrow is familiar with when he was at LSU. So that's to be determined. I don't see any surprising cuts, but obviously Bobby Hart, AJ Green, Geno Atkins, I wouldn't be surprised if they moved on from them. When you look at the Senior Bowl this week, obviously the Bengals were coaches last year with their assistants. They've made a lot of changes with some of their assistants, keeping their coordinators going into 2021. Do you guys think they're missing anything by not being coaches this year? I mean, obviously, you look at Akeem Davis-Gaither, Akeem Adeniji, Logan Wilson were guys that they became familiar with at the Senior Bowl and they added in the NFL draft. But do you think it's a huge difference for this coaching staff?
No. Practices are on film. Coaches know that. They are watching that film every day. I am told a few members of the coaching staff are down there. All player interviews are almost exclusively done on Zoom. So I don't think it's going to be a huge difference. You know, they can watch whatever they want on, you know, film. And that's a huge advantage to, you know, obviously technology, but, you know, I don't think the Bengals coaching staff misses a whole lot from not having their entire staff down there and not being a coaching staff and coaching and having these player that really hands-on approach with these players. So yes, I just don't think that it's a huge difference. And quite frankly, all NFL teams are going through the same thing. Most coaching staffs, a lot of members aren't down in Mobile, Alabama, because we're still in the middle of a pandemic, and they're looking at practices and they're going to look at the game on TV. and they'll look at all the practices via the computer when the Senior Bowl sends them the film.
I have mixed opinions on this. You know, the Bengals have said before, like, they'll never find someone or identify someone at the Senior Bowl. You know who all of these people are going in, and none of it's going to, and nothing that a player does in a few practices and in a, and I don't want to call it an exhibition, but in the Senior Bowl game itself, will make someone who's a fourth round pick into a second round pick. But I really do believe the Senior Bowl matters more than others. Let's think for a second about what the Senior Bowl is. It's a chance to bring basically seniors, most of whom are second to seventh round or even a couple undrafted prospects, and put them against each other. It's most important for the players who haven't had that experience at the college level yet. Players from, say, the FCS ranks or from smaller Division I schools, even Division III schools. So in some ways, the impact of having the virtual Senior Bowl means getting less depth in the amount of players you're less comprehensive look at all of the players. But I still think it doesn't impact how they can address the bulk of their draft board. You know, in most ways, it doesn't matter. But I do think that there are some players, probably 10 players at this Super Bowl, who really does matter for. Maybe that impacts the Bengals draft this year. Maybe it doesn't. But there's definitely an effect of the remoteness for the majority of the coaching staff.
The Bengals are almost finished with all of their coaching hires right now. We talked about it last week. Tyler, I know you're familiar with Gary Brown, former Dallas Cowboys running back coach. Kyle Kasky isn't going to be retained with the Detroit Lions. I thought he saw some success with Joe Mixon while he was here in the running back room, familiar with Gio Bernard. Do you see this team, an old coach like they did with Frank Pollock in the running back position?
I think Gary Brown would be an excellent fit for this coaching staff. He is looking at other places though, because he has other options. A lot of teams want him and know the type of success he brings as a running back coach. It's going to come down to scheme fit and obviously money. The Bengals have an advantage schematically. Brown and the offensive line coach, run game coordinator, Frank Pollock, they have worked together in Dallas. Pollock's run game philosophy fits what Brown likes to do. Pollock likes, we've said it multiple times, that zone block in scheme and the run game. So I think that there's a fit there. As far as Kyle, yeah, I can see them bringing him back to Cincinnati as well. Those decisions, I think, will probably happen either next week or shortly after the Super Bowl. I don't see them making a hire by the end of this week. We're recording this on a Thursday. I don't see it happening. I know that meeting with Gary Brown has already happened. I just don't see them making a hire this week.
Yeah, I mean, not a lot to add after what Tyler said. I'll just say that there's not a better running backs coach who has worked so closely and as in-depth in the wide zone scheme and with Frank Pollock, arguably in the entire NFL, unless the Bengals can get like Alex Gibbs or Bill Callahan to coach their running backs, which I don't see happening. No, it'd be a good hire for sure. I do think it's a fun conversation. It's just a funny thought. I've mentioned this before on this podcast that we only talk about these assistant coaches in January and February. And then after that, we move on and look at bigger picture, offensive coordinator, head coach wide, criticisms and analysis. But it's an important position, no doubt. And I'm glad that it's getting its due at this point of the calendar.
To be determined when that becomes official. Make sure you stay with Cincinnati.com. We're going to talk everything Super Bowl starting next week and any updates in the Bengals world. Tyler, it's your time of the podcast. Go ahead with your questions.
All right. So my first question has to do with the Pro Bowl. Obviously, it's going to be a virtual Pro Bowl. on Sunday. So the question is, obviously no player in, from the Bengals made the Pro Bowl this year. And that is the first time that has happened since the 2010 season. So my question to you two, will any Bengal make the Pro Bowl next year? And if so, who?
Oh, that's a great question. I see Jesse Bates probably not having the same season he had this past year because it was unbelievable. He played like a top safety. I could see Jesse Bates going back. Carl Lawson, if they retain him, this guy, I feel like he's just going to go wild next year. And I could see him making it. Joe Burrow, if he stays healthy for a full year, to be determined what he's going to look like in year two, but I could see him in the quarterback position, or maybe not first team, but an alternate. And then we'll throw T. Higgins out there. So I have four.
Wow.
I think the most fascinating conversation that you can have around this is whether or not Joe Mixon is a Pro Bowler next season, because he has been Pro Bowl quality when healthy since 2018, and the Bengals are going back to a run scheme that suits him extremely well. But how much do the Bengals run the ball, and will they have an offensive line efficient enough to run it? I'll get back to you on that. That's tough. That's tough. I don't see the Bengals getting more than two or three Pro Bowlers, just because getting more than that is hard to do unless you're a 10, 11, or 12 win team or more, which I'm not predicting the Bengals to be. I'll go with Jesse Bates, I think, definitely, because the league catches up to players at less, you know, high, at less highly regarded position like safety. The league catches up to players like that. And aside from that, I'll go Tyler Boyd, I guess. I think the Bengals passing production will be there. And I just think there are more better quarterbacks than Joe Burrow, who production wise and win-loss wise this coming season. It's a good question. Joe Mixon, I'm 50-50 on.
Yeah, win-loss does matter when you look at the Pro Bowl, because to be completely honest, it's a popularity contest. If you're not winning, teams aren't paying attention to your roster. And you can see that from this past season when it comes to Pro Bowl votes.
Okay. I like your two answers. Lindsay, you have like the whole offense, but that's,
you know, fine. I look at that and I just, is Joe Burrow giving you a full season? That's what I want to see. This team isn't going to the playoffs in 2021. I'll say that right now on this podcast. I'm pretty much set on the same wins as I had for them going into the 2020 season when I look at next year. But I just need to know the health. If you could just tell me the future of how healthy these guys are going to be, then I'll be able to give you a better answer. But it's a popularity contest. Honestly feel more bad for guys when it comes to all pro and Pro Bowl, because it's in their contracts for incentives and making more money. And when you're looking at extensions, I feel bad for the players, not because they want to go to the Pro Bowl. I mean, it's whatever. But getting nominated for it helps you when it comes to making extra money. So I feel more about that for their contract wise for incentives than anything.
Yeah, that's true. I think with Joe Burrow, what might hurt him is the AFC, that there's really good quarterbacks in AFC. Obviously the best quarterback in the game is in the AFC. So that might hinder his ability to make the Pro Bowl at least next year. But my picks would be Jesse Bates. Just look at the players who made the Pro Bowl on the AFC side this year. Minka Fitzpatrick. I mean, I do think Minka Fitzpatrick is deserving. Tyrann Mathieu, we see what he is doing with the Kansas City Chiefs. He's definitely deserving. The one that I question is Justin Simmons. He definitely had a good season with the Broncos, but I do think that Jesse Bates probably had a better season than him. And, you know, so I do think that Jesse Bates has a chance to edge him out maybe next year if they have similar type seasons. And Jesse Bates is getting a lot of recognition and praise for the season that he just had. And then on the offensive side, I have Joe Mixon, and that is because of when you look at the other running backs in the AFC, Derrick Henry, he's probably the best running back in AFC. I don't think anybody would debate that. But then Nick Chubb and Josh Jacobs, the Raiders running back, also made it. And so I do believe that Joe Mixon is in that same category. He just has to stay healthy. So those would be my picks. And I'm basing it off of also the players that are also in that conference at position. And so I do think that's going to hurt the Bengals wide receivers and Joe Burrow too.
And I want to say that I don't have Joe Burrow as a starter. Have him as an alternate. So, you know, maybe the second or third. I don't think he's going to be the number one. Like you mentioned, it's obviously going to be more than likely Patrick Mahomes. He's the best quarterback in the NFL right now overall anyways.
Okay. Well, my second question, I think you guys are going to have fun with this one. So with the Super Bowl being next week, we'll get our picks in next week. But this is a Super Bowl-inspired question. Which NFL city is best equipped to host a Super Bowl?
Oh, okay. I've been to two Super Bowl cities during Super Bowl week. One was New York and the other was Indianapolis. I think of warm weather because I remember everybody freaking out when it was in New York because it was going to be an outdoor Super Bowl and ended up being great weather. There was a snowstorm the next day, but the weather was absolutely fine for the game.
Wait, what's great weather to you, Lindsay?
Not a blizzard for the Super Bowl.
What was it, like 40 degrees outside?
It was chilly because we got to New York. I want to say we got to New York on a Tuesday. We did Radio Row all week and then the Super Bowl game happened, but the next day, I remember there was a snowstorm. I think when you look at the Super Bowl, you think of, well, it's different this year because of obviously we're in a pandemic still. I think you think of warm cities. So I think anything in California or Florida is what you want. It's ideal for planning purposes if you're in a non-pandemic year. I think Indy is so underrated. They do a great job when you look at the NCAA tournament. They have concerts. I love their stadium. I feel like it's a top five NFL stadium. I might get some hate for that because it's just Indianapolis. When you think of the Super Bowl, you think of, you know, bigger cities. And as I mentioned, warmer weather. So I would say Miami would be the best city for the Super Bowl. And Indy's like my honorable mention.
Okay.
I think that Indianapolis is the best city to host a big event. In every time of year, but the winter. I think that being at a warm weather Super Bowl is just too important just for the overall energy and environment. I'm going to go with Atlanta. I remember I heard good things when they had a Super Bowl there. That'll be my pick.
Great stadium.
I'm a little bit biased, but I do have to say Miami, since, you know, I have recency bias and I'm fresh off a Super Bowl there. It was amazing down there. And I've never been to a Super Bowl here, but it's going to be there soon. Los Angeles. I want to see how a Super Bowl is at SoFi Stadium. And obviously LA is known for having big events, Grammys, Oscars, you name it. So I do think that's going to be a good Super Bowl too, because it's LA.
I love me some Los Angeles. No, that would be a great time. Unfortunately, Cincinnati is not going to be hosting a Super Bowl anytime soon, but Super Bowl week is so much fun. I mean, the people that attend games besides media members are people who really don't even have a huge interest in the NFL game. Rarely do fans get to go because the ticket is so expensive. But if you ever have a chance, go to Radio Row or any of the experiences if you're in the Super Bowl cities, to just, you know, take in all of the atmosphere when we're in a non-pandemic year, obviously.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Super Bowl week, I was on South Beach almost every night.
You were partying last year. You were enjoying that coverage of the Super Bowl.
Oh, yeah. I had a good time. I'm not going to lie to y'all.
Are you going next week?
Unfortunately, the coronavirus pandemic has ruined my Super Bowl plans. So I will not be there next week. I'm still sad about it. Thanks for opening up a wound again, Lindsay. It was closing up, but you reopened it. And I'm going to be sad for the rest of the day now.
It's not even going to be that fun because obviously you can't do the same things. They're going to, I want to say they're not going to have parties, but
I hope not for our sake, so we can have a Super Bowl week next year.
Yes, I and I know you guys have plenty on Cincinnati.com. What is up there right now, Charlie?
I'll pitch going forward this weekend of what we learned from the Senior Bowl and Senior Bowl week. Coming in next week, I'll have a story looking at former UC Bearcat Travis Kelce and how the Cincinnati Bearcats turned now the Super Bowl headed best tight end in the NFL, how the Bearcats turned him from a quarterback into a tight end.
Tyler, what you got?
Nice. So I have five options for the Bengals at the number five pick. We kind of addressed it early on in this podcast. And then next week, I will have a story on Jesse Bates. So keep it locked on Cincinnati.com.
Make sure you check it out, Cincinnati.com, over on Twitter, EMQ Sports, Instagram, EMQ Bengals. And thank you for listening to the Bengals Beat Podcast. Seeing the Senior Bowl is coming up this week. Joined by one of my Twitter favorites, NFL Network producer, Ben Finnell. How you doing, Ben?
I'm doing well. It's an exciting time that we now have 30 teams in full offseason mode, with two just left in their Super Bowl quest. But we have the Senior Bowl this week, and this draft season is really a 365-year-day animal. So, you know, it's fun that all these teams have joined us and we could start looking at the prospects.
Yeah, I told you off there, we've been talking NFL draft in Cincinnati for a couple months now. And a lot of people want to go pretty heavy. As we know, the Cincinnati Bengals are going to pick number five. You can look at the 2020 season and say, you got to fix the offensive line. We don't know what will happen in free agency if they decide to go O-line in free agency or just wait until the draft. I think a lot of fans need to remember that it doesn't end after the first round. But I'll go ahead and go offensive line heavy with you right now, because I feel like we're going to see that in the first and second round. We have Rashawn Slater, Penei Sewell are some of the top two names I'm hearing right now. If you're the Cincinnati Bengals, who are you taking?
Well, they're both going to be really good players. So really quick, a quick primer. Neither of them played in 2020. Both opted out. Rashawn Slater, coming from Northwestern, a little bit more positional versatile. So if you want a guy that can potentially slide into guard and be a seamless fit, that's going to be Slater. He has a nasty play style, much more of a bubble butt, people mover, brute strength type of offensive tackle. There's some question on whether he's going to be able to handle some speed and athleticism off the edge in the NFL. A lot of people point to his tape against Chase Young last year, where he really was able to handle the number two overall pick in last year's draft. Reminds me a little bit of Joel Petonio, who plays guard for the Cleveland Browns, has been a three-time Pro Bowler. I think that would be a great fit. Penei Sewell looks like he was built in a lab somewhere to play tackle in the NFL. He's what we call a Petri dish player, in that they were somehow created from scratch. He's got the length, the feet, the hand usage, really impressive processing for a young guy, quick off the ball, balance, body control, all that athletic stuff you want to hear from a tackle. But the Cincinnati Bengals, sitting here at the number five spot, is going to be prime position to field a lot of offers and to make sure you have that phone available for these teams that want to come up and get their quarterbacks of the future. So the Bengals are sitting here very comfortable with their quarterback of the future in a landscape of the draft that is typically quarterback heavy. So whether that's entertaining calls for Detroit, Carolina, the 49ers, even New England and the Indianapolis Colts have no quarterback of the future. These are going to be all teams very aggressive and looking to trade up. I would be shocked, Lindsay, if the Cincinnati Bengals are picking the fifth overall pick when it's all said and done.
If you are the GM, I'm going to put you in the shoes, because I love doing that with our guest. What are you doing at five? Are you saying, we could move down? Like you mentioned, it's going to be pretty quarterback heavy in the first round, and there's a lot of NFL teams that need new starting quarterbacks.
I'm going to do everything I can to get out of the fifth overall pick and try to stockpile more picks. We only have three picks in the top 100. We have the fifth, the 38th, and the 69th. I would like to come away with five picks in the top 100 with some combination of trading down, potentially maybe getting two first round picks for that fifth overall. I just think the Cincinnati Bengals need a ton on the roster. It's not so much we need these foundational cornerstone pieces. We need a lot. I think we need to add more influx of young players, both in free agency and the draft, and try to add as much competition and new blood and bodies into this locker room. So stockpiling more picks at the back end of round one and later in the draft, I think is going to be the name of the game with the Bengals here. And they really have to have this kumbaya with themselves this offseason and figure out who they want to be. Because it's a weird mix of style of Zach Taylor's scheme coming from the Rams and Sean McVay's type of tree. And then what Joe Burrow did under Joe Brady at LSU. It's a very kind of conflicting style. So that LSU system put a lot of pressure on Joe Burrow. And this offensive line in Cincinnati was not ready to handle the pressure put on the quarterback position. So I'd like to see them come up with a more foundational scheme, lean on the run game, take pressure off of Joe Burrow. So what can we do with that offensive line and maybe change our philosophical approach on offense? But to answer your question, I hope at all costs, let's get out of this number five spot and try to stockpile as many picks as possible.
Your guy, somebody you're probably familiar with, Daniel Jeremiah, he actually put his mock draft out, and I'm sure it could change. And he's actually been pretty heavy on Rashawn Slater. If you are looking at the first round and just how heavy it is off with offensive linemen, do you think Slater's gone in the first round?
Absolutely. He won't make it out of the top 10. So Penei Sewell, Rashawn Slater, both going to be top 10 picks. Now, what team wants to go get them? Where do they think Slater can play? Is he a tackle first? Is he a guard? Some teams have even thought about playing him at center. And just to let fans know, he's only played tackle at Northwestern. So that's a bit of a projection. But like I had mentioned before, Joel Bitonio was a tackle at Nevada, never played inside, and has been a Pro Bowl guard. So we've seen it before. It can happen. Rashawn Slater's a really good player. But part of the draft and the cat and mouse of the draft as well is weighing the positional depth and the positional value of the collective draft. So two of the areas I know Bengals fans are looking at and looking all over, tackle and receiver, are very, very deep positions. So now it's the whole cat and mouse of looking at your board and saying, is there comparable talent later in the draft that we can skip on it now? And at receiver and tackle, the two positions that seem to be front and center for that fifth overall pick, there's a lot of depth and a lot of talent, not only later in round one, but on day two and all the way through the draft. So I think the Bengals are in a really good spot right now to be comfortable. You don't have to panic. You don't have to reach. I think they're sitting in a great spot at five to field a lot of offers and to address some of their needs later in the draft as well.
They got T. Higgins at the top of the second round last year, and he's been a great weapon. And it's to be determined on what he would have looked like a full rookie season if Joe Burrow would have been healthy. You got T. Higgins. You got Tyler Boyd out there. Joe Mixon is going to be returning after missing pretty much the whole entire season in 2020. A lot of people like a reunion. They see Jamar Chase out there. If this team stays at five and they don't go offensive lineman, and maybe they do that on day two, what do you think about Jamar Chase, and what do you like about him coming back and playing with his former quarterback?
Well, he's an outstanding player. He's a receiver that can win all over the formation. He's a guy that can win outside the numbers as well as inside, as a really aggressive play personality, getting off the ball with his releases in his stems at the catch point, blocking yards after catch. He's one of these guys that's a contagious type of presence to not only the locker room, but the receiver room. He plays with a certain type of mentality, and that's what you want. He is wired differently. He is uber competitive, but we need to ask ourselves, how are we going to use him in the offense? Are we going to make it hard to get him the ball? And I think how we're projecting a lot of these players into their offenses and whether these offenses are QB friendly or not is a big factor of success for these young quarterbacks and what they're asking them to do. So I would love to add a Jamar Chase with a Joe Burrow and a T. Higgins and a Joe Mixon. That sounds really exciting. But my next question would be, how are we using him? How hard are we going to make it to get him the ball? Can we make Joe Burrow's life easier? And that should be 2021's primary focus. How do we help Joe Burrow? Adding offensive line helps him. Committing to the run game helps him. Finding receiver weapons around him absolutely helps him. But it's all got to come in the right pot of scheme. And I think Zach Taylor is really going to have to go to the lab this offseason and figure out who they want to be moving forward for Joe Burrow.
I think you can watch the AFC in a favorite with Patrick Mahomes and his relationship, what he's been able to do with Travis Kelce, a future Hall of Famer. And of course, Cincinnati remembers the former Bearcat. What is your mindset? Because I'm like, look, not everybody can be a Travis Kelce in the first round, but the comparison with Pitts right now, what he can do to an offense and just a game changer out there. He's more than a tight end. Would you take a tight end with the number fifth pick?
I think five is a little rich for tight end, particularly a tight end that's a oversized receiver. He's a big slot receiver. He doesn't do a lot of inline blocking, very lean, angular frame. All his best qualities are receiver-like stuff. Separating, excellent hands, tracking ability, adjusting, winning in the red zone, one-on-one, outside the numbers. But if Zach Taylor wants to have that foundational scheme like the Rams, like the 49ers, like Matt LaFleur in Green Bay, with a focus on the run game, you need to have a tight end that does a lot of the dirty work in the run game as well, more like a George Kittle than a Travis Kelce. So how they're going to use that tight end at the next level, Kyle Pitts, I'll tell you, any offensive coordinator, any quarterback wants a Kyle Pitts in their offense. He is an exciting playmaker. But how you're going to use him and how you're going to design the offense around these playmakers is what I keep coming back to. And every time I look at this Bengals team and their roster and their coaching staff, it's like just swirling. I don't want to say swirling the drain because it sounds negative, but it's so fluid, Lindsay. I think it's everybody is so young. The roster is young. The quarterback's young. The head coach is young. It's a ball of clay right now. You have to add good players to the locker room. You want to add Kyle Pitts at five? It's a little rich, but you're adding a good player. You want to put Ja'Marr Chase in there at five? No one's going to complain. Either of these tackles, no one's going to complain, but we need a lot more. So I think Kyle Pitts is an exciting player, a little rich for five, but this is the nature of the NFL. Offense, 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 score points, points, points. If you win games 45-41, nobody really cares. You're winning games and lighting up the scoreboard. Who played corner for the Chiefs last year in the Super Bowl? Nobody knows. Nobody cares. Score points, points, points. So if you want to commit as much resources to the offense, I think that's kind of the nature of football right now.
No, I agree. I feel like offense wins championships these days in the NFL, but I'm going to switch sides with you right now because this team is thin when it comes to pass rush right now. They're more than likely going to walk away from Geno Atkins. They might bring Mike Daniels back just to add more depth. He did okay as a free agent this past season. Carl Lawson to be determined. What's going to happen with his extension? I see them bringing him back over, looking at the secondary at William Jackson III, but they need help. If you're the Cincinnati Bengals, and a lot of people are saying, well, number five, if you're not going offensive line, you got to go D-line. Are you reaching? Is there somebody on day two? And who are you looking at in free agency?
Well, now we're hitting full reach country here because there is no edge rusher dominating the top. And this happens. Sometimes you have a Chase Young, Myles Garrett, Bosa brothers, and some years you don't. And this is one of those years that there is no top flight, top five pass rusher. Some people believe it could be a Gregory Rousseau out of Miami. Some believe it could be a Kwity Paye. Some believe it's maybe a Azeez Ojulari at Georgia, who's a kind of a still kind of his draft stock is still building at the moment, but he's a first round pick. Number five and taking any of these edge rushers is probably reach country, but I think the Bengals need to address it in the draft and free agency. They need a lot of talent and a lot of help at this edge position. I'm hoping the defensive tackles, DJ Reader, I'm hoping that works out. I'm hoping Geno Atkins, you know, things work out and kind of that veteran presence along the front, hoping Carl Lawson can hang out for a couple more years. I like the young linebackers. You need to get stronger at edge. You need to get more athletic at edge. You need to get more versatile at edge. So I think there's a lot of different shapes, sizes, parts that they're going to need to this defensive end room. And I think finding somebody that can play in sub packages and slide inside is important. I think finding guys with a quick first step is important. You might as well hit reset on the entire defensive end room at the moment here. And there's a couple positions like that on this Bengals roster. 2021, I do not believe this is going to be a competitive team. This is kind of the get over the hill type of year. And there's going to be some growing pains. We got to stay healthy. We got to figure out who we are and who we have moving forward. So this is going to be that big transitional year to be a, is Zach Taylor the guy? Is Joe Burrow the guy? It's still a little fluid and up in the air. 2021 is going to be a big test, I think, for the organization.
You mentioned you like the linebackers, and yes, they brought in Josh Bynes on a one-year deal, and he added that veteran presence, leadership presence. Were you surprised with how the rookies played in their first year?
Yeah, you know, the linebacker is really tough. Offensive coordinators sit in their room for 6 days wondering and figuring out how can we confuse these young linebackers. It's a tough spot. There's a lot of misdirection, a lot of eye candy in the NFL, and it's all designed to attack young linebackers and safeties. And they had some growing pains. But I love the influx of athleticism in the middle of the defense there with Davis Gaither, Jermaine Pratt, Logan Wilson. I think they have some really interesting young parts, even a Marcus Bailey, who they got in the seventh round. I think is a nice young part as well, now that he's healthy coming out of Purdue. Jordan Evans is another interesting player in there. But they went and got Josh Bynes to have some veteran presence in there to settle that group down because it was so young. So they took a lot of their lumps. I'm just hoping the game is going to slow down for them, you know, into year two, year three for some of these guys. But you have to stay athletic on that second level. There's too much green grass to cover in the NFL. There's too many backs to cover out of the backfield these days. I think the nature and the era of these oversized thumping linebackers is kind of over. So I love the athleticism they put in there. Now we just need the game to slow down just a little bit for the young guys.
And I can't let you go without one more. We got to talk quarterback Joe Burrow. He didn't get a full rookie season in to be determined if he's going to be ready for that week one start in 2021. He'll start throwing and running next month. What did you think about Burrow and his few starts that we did see?
Well, I thought he flashed a lot of the things we saw at LSU. They obviously leaned on a lot of empty formations and let him kind of point and shoot the defense. And that empty formation philosophy is defensive truth serum. You kind of weed out what the pressure threats are and you weed out what the coverage identity is. It gives the quarterback a lot of information, but it puts a lot of pressure on the quarterback as well. So I saw a lot of things that carried over from LSU, but I said, you know what? This is a tough ask for a young quarterback. I think it puts a lot of pressure on him. And when you look at the things they didn't do, they were bottom half in RPOs, bottom half in motions and shifts, bottom half in stacks and bunches, all that schematic elements to help offense, to help receivers uncover, to help a quarterback have easy completions. I just want to see them do more schematically to help Joe Burrow. And I think there's a lot of question about whether he has the strongest arm to make some of these wow hero throws that they're going to be asking him to do in these empty formations, whether he has the athleticism to create for himself out of structure. And it's okay if he can't. We've seen Jared Goff be the first overall pick and go to a Super Bowl in his young career. We've seen Tom Brady make his 10th Super Bowl. He hasn't broken the pocket in 5 years. So you can be a statue pocket passer as well. I just want to see them add more schematic elements to make Joe Burrow's life easier. So adding offensive line is only going to help him, but let's put him under center. Let's lean on a run game. Let's work some play action and try to make some easier throws and completions for him. But I think what he did in his rookie year, I thought he flashed enough to earn the respect of the locker room, the coaching staff, the fan base, his receivers. And that's all you really want from a young quarterback. Just flash that you got it. And I think he does. Now let's figure out how we want to use him and how we can help him moving forward.
Ben Fennell, NFL Network producer. I know you're busy this time of year. Where can fans find you and what are you up to right now?
Well, you can always find me tweeting nonsense at Ben Fennell _ NFL. Pretty much in the full offseason mode right now. NFL Network working on Senior Bowl coverage that starts tomorrow down in Mobile. Whatever framework of the combine we're going to have, it seems like it's going to be heavy pro day coverage for the next couple of months. And then the NFL draft, I'll be working pretty closely with Daniel Jeremiah, providing all sorts of video and research for him. I love the draft. I've already got my 2022 board working out. So I love teams like the Bengals that are all about the draft, sitting there with the 5th overall pick. And this will not be the last conversation around the Bengals. I expect them to be very busy in free agency, very busy with the trades and the phone calls as well, and figuring out where they're going to be in the draft. But, you know, I love this stuff, Lindsay, and it's always fun talking to you.
Well, we love talking NFL draft. We'll have you back again soon. And best of luck with Senior Bowl coverage this week. Thank you again.
Thanks, Lindsay.